Hello, everybody, and welcome to another super special spoiler-sode of SotsWatch. I'm Aaron.
I'm Ben.
I'm Doug. What was that?
I don't know.
It's my new, announcer voice.
It's your character you're trying out.
Yeah.
Cool. What I do know is we're talking Captain Marvel today. Tonight.
We're talking higher.
Further.
Faster.
As you might tell, one of us is not so enthused about talking about this. But we'll get to that soon.
Yeah. I was mad about the marketing all along, but
I think to some degree we all were. But none more so than than Doug.
So let's real quick, let's keep with form. Let's talk about what we're drinking while we talk.
Sure. I'll go ahead and start. I've got Left Hand Brewing Company's Milk Stout Nitro.
Yes.
I like that.
In a 12-ounce bottle. So spoiler alert to all those who are wondering the mystery sod who had it. It's me. And after the day I've had, boy oh boy, it's going to taste delicious.
You might hear an, oh yeah, after every sip, and that's just Aaron enjoying it.
Oh god, hell yes.
It's perfectly natural.
All right. Oh! All right. So who's next?
Well, I'll go ahead and follow that up.
Oh, Jesus. All right.
I'm drinking a beer from Deschutes Brewery. Take two. I'm drinking a beer from Deschutes Brewery, and it's called Daschutes.
Oh.
D-A-S-H-O-O-T-Z. Daschutes!
Okay.
I'll be 100% honest and say that I originally got it because I love the design of the can. It's this really like overcrowded tropical print wrapping the entire can. But it's a nice, it's a pilsner. It's a bohemian style pilsner. Toasted, light, citrusy, easy to drink.
I'm drinking Zipline Copperall, which Shirley has been on before, but I've got a lot of it left for my birthday. And that's it's classic. My favorite. Yeah, it's a good one. It's one of my favorite beers around, so it's okay. But yeah. I forget, it's between a lager and an ale, as they call it. I can't remember if they brew it like an ale and finish it like a lager, something like that, or the other way around. But yeah, it's really good. Little bit of chocolate, a little bit of hazelnut, a lot of bit of beer.
Well, that's just great.
It's really good, Ben.
Well, that's swell.
So we all saw the movie Captain Marvel this weekend. Maybe you've heard of it out there in the audience.
Yes, we did.
Little studio called Marvel Studios.
Yeah. If you haven't heard of it, take a quick little 360 wherever you're at right now. Chances are you'll see a poster or some sort of video ad for this movie. Because holy shit, that marketing! But
and the video ads will apparently be all of the footage where the actors weren't very good, and they thought that would they just put that on the TV. Before we get way too into spoilers, the marketing was so bad, especially now after having seen the movie. The marketing was terrible, but there was a lot of it.
There was a lot of marketing.
Yeah.
And I would agree, not their strongest marketing campaign. Oddly enough, I would almost say Age of Ultron's first trailer was one of their best marketing things ever done.
Awesome.
But we're not talking about Age of Ultron, we're talking about Captain Marvel and that marketing.
And even though we said spoilers a lot, spoiler warning, we're just going to jump right into the movie and not worry about it. So if you haven't seen it yet and don't like being spoiled, go watch it and then come back.
Yep.
Yeah, because spoilers,
that's how it goes around here.
But I one point that I think we should make before we get into anything that can be too spoilery or even too controversial among the three of us, can we just point out that this de-aging face CGI software is pretty much just done. It's awesome and it looks great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Should we just start? We can just start there. Well, Samuel L. Jackson looked fantastic, except when he had to move. Then you could tell he was a 70-year-old man sometimes. Yeah. But
yeah,
did you think Coulson, Clark Gregg, his was not quite as good?
I would say so.
Yeah, there was something a touch off about it, but even that, I'm maybe, again, just a touch.
I kind of feel like it might be easier to judge when I see the movie again, but he's like, he doesn't look that much different, and I think they tried to make him look younger than he would have. I'm not sure. His didn't look quite as good. Sam Jackson's looked phenomenal, even though he also never looked that young in 1995. Yeah. But that's okay.
Sure.
He's probably only supposed to be playing a character in his 50s in real life at this point also. I don't think Nick Fury is supposed to be 70.
Probably not, but you don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really matter. Samuel Jackson's sort of ageless. Like, he'll die at 95, and he'll look 60 still, and everyone will be like, well, I thought he was only like 60.
Yeah, I thought we had another 30 years with him.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I think pretty – that technology is more or less there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it looks really good, whatever they're doing. It's because it's not over the top. It's not just a completely CGI face over the face of the person in the scene. Yeah. You know, they kind of almost use the CGI as a touch-up.
Right.
Yeah.
The way you'd use makeup.
Interesting.
Where do you guys want to start? Are we just I don't remember enough about it to go scene by scene.
Yeah, I don't think we need a scene by scene breakdown. But
I remember where it starts, and we can at least start there because it does set up a few themes in the movie.
Okay.
It starts with Veers, as she's known to the Kree, or Carol Danvers, or Brie Larson, as you may know, Captain Marvel. She's a young girl. She's racing go-karts, I think. And she pushes it too far, and she flies off, and she's getting chewed out, and she wakes up. And she's in this super future, real sci-fi world that we come to find out is the Kree home planet or central planet. And she wakes up her trainer, Jude Law, to get some martial arts training in because she can't sleep. And that's where we start the movie. Mm-hmm. And I only think that's particularly important because that clip of her as a young girl crashing the go-kart sets up a lot of the other themes that they do, other memories that she flashes back to. But that's another big story point here. She doesn't seem to know exactly who she was before she became a Kree warrior.
She's got a touch of amnesia, it seems.
The old anime character origin story thing.
Or Jason Bourne.
Yeah, that's... Or Wolverine.
Or Wolverine.
Or it's an origin that's been done before, but haven't they all?
Yeah.
Yep.
This is going to be jumping around a lot. Did you guys wonder why they didn't say Jude Law's character's name until the last like 10 minutes of the movie or whatever?
Yeah, I was a little confused about who people were. I think they did, and maybe this was just my attention span, I don't think they did a particularly good job of naming characters in this movie in general.
Yeah, I don't think they did either. They had the Fury scene where he's like, people call me Fury, my kids would call me Fury, my mom calls me Fury, blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
They called Coulson Rookie, which I think that's sort of fine because it's kind of tough too because I think they assume rightly that most of the audience knows what's going on.
Yeah.
But you should never assume that all of your audience knows what's going on to that degree. You should trust your audience, but you still have to name people who have names.
Yeah.
Sure. I think the only one I picked up of the side characters was the sniper Kree lady. I think she was Minerva.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's right. They did say her name a few times, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know any of the other Star Force names except Korath, and the only reason we know that is because he was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
right.
Jaimon Hansu's character.
Yeah. No, yeah. I don't think the
guy with the beard, did he have a name?
Not that I caught.
They said the other guy's name, the guy with the two handguns, but I don't remember what it was.
Neither
now.
Do
but
I.
They did say his name.
Yeah,
they
too.
Say his name too. What's the name of the head of the Skrull? Skrull being the shape-shifting aliens and enemies of the Kree.
And see, that might be one of the first names they say, because Talos, they're like, watch out for this guy. This is Talos, and he's bad.
Okay, there you go.
By the way, played fantastically by Ben Mendelsohn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, really, really great role.
I should say, not to go back to the marketing, but the marketing, Brie Larson's stuff was so flat, and Samuel L. Jackson felt like he was in a different movie. That came across much better in the actual movie.
Yeah,
I thought the performances were much better.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there were things about old Captain Marvel that I found myself really like pining for the Marvel quippy hero that we've gotten so many times.
Sure, yeah.
But there were also times that having her feel things with a little more gravity and take things a little more seriously from the outset was refreshing, I think. At least it changed the pace of how I felt the movie would go otherwise.
Do you think... So I kind of looked at this movie in two halves. And again, it's hard to say because I've only seen it once 2 days ago. The first half for me, I didn't feel like the script or the direction had any idea what to do, how to handle the character of Veers in that part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. They wanted to make it seem like she was unsure, and that's fine, but the audience should know a little bit about what's going on. The audience should never be too far ahead of the movie, but it should be a little bit ahead of the character.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
That is tough to do with the whole amnesia story.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, the first half of it, or at least the first act, is more or less flashbacks that she's trying to piece together. So you get the intro scene where it's the little girl with the go-kart. Shortly thereafter, they're tasked, the Kree Star Force, whatever it is, they're tasked with picking up some spy or something who has a code they need. That ends up being a Skrull ambush.
Skrull.
Mm-hmm.
Who then, led by Talos, who then knock Veers out, and she is placed in some machine where she is, again, going through flashbacks as they are now looking for some information in her memory. The Skrulls, that is.
Yeah, and it's kind of painted as the Skrulls are the bad, you know, these evil terrorist bad guys. Yeah, that interrogation, I guess, is the right word. They were going through her dreams and memories trying to find some information. We don't know what they're looking for, but...
Yeah.
I thought that the memory jogging scene was cool, but also went on a little too long for my taste.
I'll agree with you there.
Yeah, it could have been shorter, and I think it would have been a little punchier. They took too long once the initial like flashback sequence was fine. I think that even went a little long. And then you started hearing his voice kind of over directing things, guiding her where to look, what to focus on, things like that. And that kind of half in, half out thing lasted too long. And then, yeah, he was like almost directly controlling what she would look at and what she would focus on. And that part was the only part that was like kind of appropriately short.
Yeah. Cause he was trying to, he's saying, look at the coordinates. She's flying an airplane and he's trying to get her to focus on some coordinates that she can't quite recall or whatever.
Yeah.
But at that point she kind of, it's like being in a dream when you realize you're in a dream and you're kind of trying to wake yourself up. That's what was going on, but yeah, I don't know. That scene, I liked a lot of it, but yeah, it was just a little long.
Yep.
Not going scene by scene. This is the first real action sequence. She kind of fights with those handcuffs on, for lack of a better word. especially considering these two directors and what they'd done before, I thought the action, there was nothing like hyper memorable. Like there was no airport scene from Civil War, but the action was really good and really well paced and shot, I thought.
I agree.
Yeah, I would agree with that too.
My only thing, and I'd have to go back and watch the other Marvel movies to do a real comparison. But there were a few times that I remember Brie Larson's fight choreography feeling a little pulled.
Yeah.
A little unsure. And I mean, that's fine. I don't know Brie Larson's catalog well enough to know how familiar she is with fight choreography.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, but one of the things that I liked is that the character, especially at the point in that fight, is only kind of in control of her powers and is still kind of figuring things out and testing limits. So the fact that she staggers a couple times or, you know, and many of those were intentional, but it did a lot to sell that to me.
Well, and I think what they were trying to do there, again, the first half of the movie is I had a lot of problems with, but they had the scene at the beginning where she fights Jude Law. They're sparring and she's reliant on her powers and he's telling her not to be. I think that's what that scene was trying to maybe also show, because she would occasionally take a break to try to shoot people with her hands every once in a while, but yeah. She couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to just rely on her hands and or like her, you know, actual punching and kicking ability. But I don't know if that was super effective. She won the fight anyway. She's the good guy in the movie. She's not going to lose the fight, but yeah, and the fight choreography, I feel like she used a stunt person less. Because you get the Iron Man, Captain America, people who wear masks, it's a stunt person like 90% of the time anyway, so.
Sure.
Oh, for sure. But the whole point I was building toward, that I totally whiffed on, is that Brie Larson's fight choreography felt just a little less natural than I remember Scarlett Johansson's Black Widow being.
Okay.
But A, they fight very different ways, and B, I think Black Widow has to be kind of more polished and flashy if she's going to be believed up against Thor and Iron Man and Spider-Man and Captain America, you know, standing alongside them, any hyper athletic assassin is going to look a little flat. That's why Hawkeye looks a little flat.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Cause I think Black Widow is it's a lot of martial arts and stuff. So yeah, you're right. It's very quick and moving people around and stuff like that. Aaron, what about you? Did you love the action? Did you hate the action?
I thought the action was fine. Again, choreography did feel a little clunky at times, but I found it entertaining enough anyway.
Yeah,
for my tastes. And they didn't like overuse action and whatnot. There was enough intrigue to go along with it that it didn't feel like overbearing with action or anything.
Yeah, it wasn't like a John Wick action movie. They did get their vehicle chase / fight scene in as per Marvel rules, apparently.
Well, yep.
Well, I was just about to say, so she tears through this alien ship she's captured on. She manages to get in an escape pod. It's damaged on her way out. It ends up crashing her on Earth or C-392? I can't remember.
C-53 or 35. I can't remember. One of something like that. Okay.
Something like those. Yep.
Earth.
Yeah, it's Earth.
And she lands in a Blockbuster. Hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvel gets its mandatory vehicle chase and fight scene out of the way real quick.
Yeah, the train fight. Which if you've seen the trailers, you've seen the train fight, or part of it anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, we got Stan Lee's cameo. Well, so at the beginning, they did the traditional Marvel logo, which usually has all the heroes. How'd you feel about old Stan Lee being all of those scenes instead?
I love that.
That was great. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Satsukers, if you can imagine that the Marvel logo that they usually do
95-second long reel.
Yeah. Where they're just panning across and it's clips from all the movies showing all the heroes. In this one, it was showing all of Stan Lee's cameos from all the movies.
Yeah, it was pretty perfect that they went with it that way.
Yeah. Nice tribute.
Paid the black and said thank you, yeah. Stan.
I think it would have been a little more poignant to save that for Endgame, but I get it because it's a very different movie, Endgame.
Yeah.
But yeah, Stan Lee's cameo in this.
Who knows?
I had a little bit of a problem with it. Stan Lee is playing his real world version of himself as he's sitting there reading lines from Mallrats, a movie where he cameoed as famous comic book author and artist and editor, Stan Lee himself.
Huh.
So if you think about it too much, Stan Lee, Marvel Comics exists in the same universe as the MCU before the superheroes are around.
Huh.
But that's just if you think about it too much. I do. Interconnected universes, that's how I think about them. It's all together.
Well, maybe in this universe, Stan Lee is less an imagination machine and more like a creative artistic journalist.
And he always wanted to be he wanted to write novels. So there was one theory of like, well, we can just imagine this is the universe where he became a famous author.
Yeah, where he wrote Christine.
Yeah. I don't know why he'd be in Mallrats, but maybe Mallrats is a very different movie in the MCU.
See, and that's also a thing. Maybe Mallrats is the MCU's version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, that could be. And again, it's only if you think about it too much, because we already know Star Wars exists in this universe because of Spider-Man. Samuel L. Jackson played a character in Star Wars. So does Nick Fury just look on the screen and see himself? Or is it an alternate universe where that's a different actor? Who can say?
Well, I'm going to say it right now. He sees an actor that looks a lot like him. And people would even tell him, like, hey, you look like Mace Windu. And he'd be like, shut up.
Get that all the time out of my face.
Mace Windu looks like me, he says.
Okay, yeah. I'd buy that. So, yeah, most of the first half is just kind of piecing the clues together, trying to figure out who Veers really is. Trying to piece the memories together. Mm-hmm. They come across, what's her friend's name? I can't remember now.
Marsha Rambeau. Also, Marsha Rambeau. Not co-pilot, but wingmate or something. They were experimental test pilots 6 years ago in 1989. There's a flashback of her playing Street Fighter in 1989. Let's not get into that right now.
I didn't even notice that, but
it was in the bar. FYI, fun fact, that bar is a bar that I go to. The bar they filmed that in is a bar I go to quite frequently out here. And my old roommate used to work in.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah, it's called, cool. It's called Tin Horn Flats. It's like a Western theme bar out here. And they have one of the best burgers I've had in LA.
Excellent. It does look like a bar that you'd find in the middle of nowhere. All right.
I live in LA, if you guys didn't know that.
got the one per episode.
That's where you live. Yep.
So yeah, we meet her friend and they have this big moment. Did that moment mean anything to you guys when they first saw each other?
You mean on her ranch in Louisiana?
Yeah, so Carol and her friend, who she doesn't remember, she does remember her at that point. I don't recall. She's starting to remember. Obviously, her friend remembers her. The records had been expunged. She'd been declared dead, but they wouldn't tell anybody why or anything like that. When they come together, what was your reaction when it's, oh, these guys have had this super close friendship? Carol helped raise her daughter. Now they've met.
First of all, I can't remember the actress's name who plays Rambo.
It's Lashana Lynch.
Lashana Lynch. I think she looks like Donna Cheadle. Her eyes remind me a lot of Don Cheadle. That's all I could think about.
I
watched her. Like, Donna Cheadle.
They gave her a weird haircut for the movie. They gave her a very 90s haircut.
Yeah.
Which just makes sense, but
yeah. No. No, I really enjoyed the way she played that role. And for what the role is, for being my wingman, my best friend, who, even though I would have liked to see a little more of that specifically, I didn't think it was a particularly powerful moment. I think maybe there was an opportunity for more drama there, but I think they wanted to save that for the conversation they have inside the house. So it made the initial meeting scene fall a little flat, but I think they were just kind of saving a lot of that tension for a scene just a minute down the road.
Well, 'cause here's what I felt about it. And I don't know, Aaron, you could tell me if, 'cause we saw the same one. I don't know. It felt like there's 15 minutes on the cutting room floor of us actually seeing them be friends in the past, rather than just throwing these little quick montage things mm-hmm. together. And like, you don't care at all about their relationship until they meet together. And that's a credit to their performances there, because when they meet as an audience member, you're just like, okay, is that the person that was in the three flashbacks that we saw?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see your point there. It does kind of, like you guys said, it just kind of comes off kind of flat. Now, whether or not they're saving that for the later talk,
yeah,
who can say, I guess.
I just kind of think there's a half an hour of this movie out there somewhere, but they really wanted to keep it at 2 hours.
Yeah. That's fair.
But I could be wrong. I also have another theory about where this script came from, but I can save that for later. And then I felt the same way about Star Force. We know nothing about, we saw almost none of her relationship with them at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's why I had a real problem with her character. It wasn't even what she was doing or being asked to do in the role. It's that we were just supposed to accept all these things that we were told later in the film had always been true beforehand. She was a rebellious guy, but she was always a good teammate, and she was a super close friend with her wingman. But you got to show us that. You can't just later tell us that that was the case, and that's why everybody either looked up to her or kind of envied her or whatever the relationship was, because we were never shown what those relationships were, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That's a fair argument.
No, you're right. I mean, we got little snippets of it. But at the same time, I think they tried to show past relationship through current behavior, mm-hmm. which again is a little dodgy when one half of the equation doesn't even remember the equation upon first meeting. But you know, so much of the movie is already in flashback and flashbacks to flashbacks and corrective flashbacks. I could see where maybe they were a little gun shy to be like, now we need a flashback series that really shows how bonded and tight these two were together.
Yeah.
So I think they tried to do it through little things like showing her Carol, is it Danvers? Davers?
Danvers, yeah.
Oh.
Danvers. Okay. Showing her, like, playing with Rambo's little girl and calling her, you know, Lieutenant Trouble or things like that, you know?
Yeah, I thought those moments were good when we got them, but it felt like, to me, the directors wanted us to go along with the journey of her discovering who she is, mm-hmm. but they just didn't know how to do that. Because, and as the audience, we already know that. We pretty much know that from the beginning of the movie. And even the people who wouldn't have known, I don't think they had any idea how to handle that. And it came off, it was just a little off for me.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think one of the things that they did, because I was not terribly surprised, even though I think they handled the story point very well, I was not terribly surprised to find out that, oh my gosh, the Kree aren't necessarily actually the good guys. Mm-hmm. What?
Right.
That wasn't shocking, but the way they handled the story point and the way that they informed you of that fact, I thought was really effective. I also thought the bit was funny where they were waiting on the black box to download.
That was great.
Yeah. Should we talk about the 90s references?
Oh, there's
a lot of them, and a lot of them were pretty funny, I thought.
I thought, yeah. I agree.
I would say the soundtrack, for me, was the most prominent. They did a damn good job getting just the right songs for just the right moments.
Yeah.
I agree. There were a couple times where the songs were a little bit much.
On the nose.
Yeah, the Nirvana Come As You Are scene. Like, why is that playing at this moment on a literal record player that she's imagining?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm
trying to remember if that song would have even been out when she left Earth. I think the answer is no.
It probably was not, but she may have heard it in the short time she was back on Earth.
Yeah, it's possible.
And just really thought it was good.
And it's perhaps. Again, if it so all these movies that are using music this way, it's because of Guardians of the Galaxy, let's make no mistake. That goes for Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
What Guardians did so well with the music was it was treated as a character in the movie. It was used when it was necessary or when it fit the scene. Sure. It wasn't just... There's a difference between I imagine Peter Quill putting this song on in this moment and Peter Quill listens to a song in this moment. Sure. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I think this movie... I mean, a lot of the scenes, music's just on in the background and people are doing something like that's whatever, it's on the radio.
Yeah.
There were just a couple moments for me where like... And I also predicted this. I was like, there'll be a fight or a chase to I'm Just a Girl. So...
Yeah, but it was so good.
It was good, but because I had said that ahead of time that was going to happen, so when it did, I kind of laughed a little bit like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I can't begrudge them that because, A, that song is fantastic, and it is like from the best example of No Doubt, which is maybe one of the best albums to come out of the 90s.
Yeah.
So if you can find that effective of a use for that amazing of a song, I say go for it. And, you know, to hell if it's a little cheesy or if it's a little predictable.
Well, and that's one that they picked knowing full well that it's going to be like a 75-25, 75 will love it, and 25 will be like, oh, geez, okay. It wasn't annoying. I was just kind of like, oh, boy.
No, for sure. But that being said, that fight happens once Carol has figured out that the Kree were hunting the Skrull for no particular reason. She's also discovered that the woman in her flashbacks, besides Rambo, there's a gray or an older woman who was a mentor of some type. This is something we kind of skipped over, but the Kree are led by a hyper-intelligent AI, and it appears as someone different to each member of the Kree when it converses with them.
The Supreme Intelligence.
It appears to Verse as this woman who she can't remember. Turns out that woman was her, like, her superior officer on Earth, and it turns out that she was not a human. She was a Kree that had switched sides and was trying to protect a number of Skrull refugees. And I guess this all leads up to we see the incident where Captain Marvel gains her powers when she is trying to save her Kree superior officer from the Kree.
Who she thought was a Skrull in all her memories. It was a Skrull originally.
Who she thought was a Skrull in all her memories, but now with the light of truth and the black box, we know was actually Jude Law.
Who I think that maybe is the scene where they say his name, finally. But I also could be wrong.
Yeah, I would need to watch it again.
That is the scene where we learn that Annette Bening, the Supreme Intelligence, and also her commanding officer, is Mar-Vell, which that I didn't like that.
Oh, I thought that's how the name was gained.
That is. I just don't like how they handled that. When they use meta lines for no real reason, because like if you aren't familiar with Captain Marvel's history or Marvel history at all, that literally meant nothing. And the only reason they put that in there was so they could have the Marvel crack at the end.
Yeah.
rather than it being like, oh, it's That's this true. Person. They were like, ah, whatever. Her real name was this. Bye.
Yeah. I mean, there are worse sins I've seen committed by comic book movies. And it was kind of a deathbed, like, this is who I really am. You mattered to me in my false persona, but me real persona likes you too. And this is me. But that's where we see where she gets her powers. She blows up this experimental light speed engine that she was test piloting. The explosion absorbs into her and she becomes Captain Marvel, or she gets all this power. And she's also had this little like disc on the back of her skull the whole movie.
Oh yeah.
That the Supreme Intelligence insists is what's giving her powers and shows that she's able to turn it off and take her powers away. And what we kind of come to learn as the movie progresses is that it's not really what gives her power. It's a dampener on her powers.
A means to control her.
Yeah. And this all leads up to what I have to admit was a kind of heavy-handed flashback moment. Although, in retrospect, I don't think it's really any more dramatic than what you might see in a lot of male-led superhero movies. But it's, you see Carol Danvers flashing back to all these times as a young girl and a young woman that she fell down. You know, she fell, she hurt herself, and that's when the Supreme Intelligence is about to take her mind over completely and kill all the Skrulls on this little space station that they're on. And that is when Carol Danvers realizes that what makes her unique is the fact that she always stood back up after falling. Mm-hmm. That was her strength. Again, I think that's a fine lesson to take away, and I don't think it was handled poorly, other than to say there was a lot of unearned weight put upon this movie.
Sure. And like you said, it was a bit heavy-handed, a little bit on the nose, but overall, a good lesson.
It's a good I think the reason it's... Well, it's real tropey, but I think doing it the way they did it in montage form, I think, is why it felt heavy-handed and off. Because that's typically a thing you'd see happen over the course of the movie. And then the final... It's Captain America at the end of Civil War saying, I could do this all day. They don't show a montage of him saying that all the times of his life right before he says that. That's why I think it felt a bit weird.
Okay. That makes sense.
But I didn't love the direction, in case that's not coming through for most of this movie.
Whatever do you mean? I will say, in typical superhero fashion, superhero movie fashion, afterwards, after this revelation of what makes her special, she then decides that she can control her powers regardless of chip on her skull or whatever. It just boom, it happened. She has her powers now.
Mm-hmm. Even though she always had them anyway.
She did. But it was that darn inhibitor chip or whatever it was. Yeah. But now it doesn't matter because plot.
Yeah, and I think if you asked some people, they would say she learned never to get knocked down. If you asked other people, they'd say she learned to trust her instincts. Mm-hmm. I don't know what this is a thing, and I talked about this last time before this movie came out. This is what bothers me about the superhero origin stories is there's really no actual reason. They just decide to start doing the right thing with all of their powers. It happens in all of them.
Yeah.
Spider-Man was pinned under a building and he's like, I got to lift this building. Now I'm the real Spider-Man. It's troubling to see it over and over and no one can really figure out a real reason for it to happen, but whatever.
I don't know.
It's a weakness of the genre.
But what I liked about this one in particular is that it is difficult to write an engaging, for lack of a better term, Superman story. Mm-hmm. Because Superman is practically invincible and has enough power to stop almost any threat without too much trouble or drama, really. So I think they did a good job of finding a way around that without making her too boring or, you know, have flaws or shortcomings that don't make sense to the powers we've already seen. Mm-hmm. So I think they did a good job making her a limited, flawed character for a movie.
Yeah. She's not unsympathetic, as powerful as she is from start to finish.
Yeah.
Right.
which it could have really easily gone the Superman way, like you said, where it's like, I don't care about this person at all or what they do, because she doesn't do the right thing all the time is I think what kind of saved it with this movie. But yeah.
I think the Cap did a good thing. I also think that when the cork is off and she's fully powered, they did a good job of showing her like adjusting to a wild amount of new power that she didn't know she had.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
They show her blasting and having to like regain her balance because it's a lot more powerful than she's used to. And they, you know, she teaches herself how to fly with this power. It's kind of rad.
Did she phase through the wall at one point? Or was I just confused about that?
Not that I
don't remember.
I couldn't tell. There's a trailer shot I'll send to you guys, but it felt like she was phasing through the wall, but I feel like if that's actually what was going on, they would have made a bigger deal about it.
Hmm.
Also, probably. She's powerful enough. Let's not also have her phase through walls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
You gotta leave something for Vision to do.
Yeah, well, he's dead, Ben.
Yeah, well.
And he'll never come back.
Well, right. that actually brings me to a point that we skipped over. It turns out that Captain Marvel's powers come from the Tesseract.
Okay, let's talk about that. Do they come from the Tesseract?
Ultimately, I think so, yeah.
I guess that's what powered that fighter engine. Because here's why I'm asking. And again, this is the problem with the direction of this movie. There was a lot of unfocused stuff. They're flying around in this advanced starfighter spaceship airplane thing.
Sure.
Because Annette Bening is trying to help the Skrulls, although we don't know that yet. And then Jude Law comes and they crash because he shoots them down. And Captain Marvel's like, hey, don't come any closer, I'll blow up this engine. He's like, no, you can't blow up the engine. And then she does, and she gets all the powers. Well, obviously, we find out later that the Tesseract was not there. It was up on the invisible spaceship in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
What happened there? Are we supposed to assume that the Tesseract was powering the little airplane from super far away?
That's what I think. I think that
was it originally the engine, and then that through several rewrites, they kind of forgot to fix it and just thought it was fine and no one would notice, which is what I think happened.
I don't know. I don't think you have to make that wild of a leap to believe that the Tesseract, which is the space stone, was able to power something remotely. Like, I don't know, especially if you're starting to think about things like quantum entanglement and high-level tech like that. It's not wild for me to think that you could have something as powerful as one of the Infinity Stones powering an engine that is quantumly linked to it.
Well, and the only thing I could think of was that Hydra in the original Captain America had weapons that used its power. Mm-hmm. I just don't know why Jude Law was so like, no, don't blow up that engine. Because that's not what he was looking for. I mean, maybe he didn't know that. I don't know.
I was going to say, I think it's easy enough to think that he doesn't know specifically what he's looking for or where it is. He knows that this engine is behaving weird in a way that may be linked to this thing. So, yeah, I mean, that part didn't bother me a whole lot. It didn't.
That's fine. That might have been just for me. What happened was there was lots of little things stacked up. So then I think I was nitpicking on other things. I couldn't dismiss things as easily because I had this whole other list of things that didn't make sense.
No, and that's fair. I guess kind of what I don't want to get too much into endgame theories yet, is because we haven't quite wrapped up with the film.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not much left in the film to go over. She gets her powers. She's fighting them off. They're doing an escape for the Skrulls to get on the escape pod or ship or what have you.
They're on the invisible ship.
Yes. They go through all that. I believe... I can't think of... Ronan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He ends up showing up and begins to launch his warheads, which Captain Marvel handles pretty handily. Not much struggle. Yeah,
she just had the brief moment at the beginning, but that was, like Ben said, she was figuring out her powers at that point, kind of.
Right. Yep. And they do have that fun little moment of Captain Marvel kind of just showing just how powerful she is, and Ronan just kind of turning to his subordinate, like, well, let's retreat.
When he said,
it's time to back
what did you
up.
Guys, what was your reaction when he said, we'll be back, and they're like, for whatever, and he's like, no, for her. Like, no, you won't, dude. We already know how you
Oh, yeah. Up. We'll be back. That's right. We'll be back for the weapon. The stone, or the, no, yeah. Her.
Well, I think what we're supposed to probably glean from that, especially knowing that he gets away right there, he pieces out and runs. I think we're supposed to know that even beyond the Supreme Intelligence, the Kree have been warned now. They know that she's out there, and he specifically has seen how powerful she's become. Where you could make the argument that the Supreme Intelligence knows she's out there but doesn't really have a scope on how powerful she is. Whereas now Ronan has seen, oh yeah, she stopped one of my huge like planetary missiles dead in its tracks and then thrashed the rest of my arsenal.
Can I give two? These are sci-fi complaints that just also cropped up in this movie as well. The prequel version of a spaceship we're familiar with being slightly smaller and slightly sleeker than the...
Yeah.
And calling everything that shoots a ballistic missile.
Yeah.
Fair.
Again, those are just two minor annoyances that every sci-fi movie has. But, yeah, I don't know. Ronan got underutilized again, but I don't know what else you would have done with him in this movie, other than just not have him in it, I guess. But
well, utilizing him too much would seem like kind of a cheat, because we know what ultimately happens to him.
True.
Yeah. But that's why the, like, we'll be back for her was completely hollow to me, because... We really already know what happens to both of them. Captain Marvel will have some adventures, obviously, but Ronan goes back shortly after the Kree-Xandar war begins, and then that goes for years into Guardians of the Galaxy.
So the movie ends, she beats Jude Law, she sends him back to the Kree with a message that she's coming for him to take the whole system down. And then she... flies off into the stars. We get a couple post-credit scenes. One of which we see the pager. The pager I think is in regular movie time. It's in the post-credits that we see Nick Fury choose the name Avengers.
I think you might have that backwards.
Yeah, you have it switched around. The last shot of the movie. Okay, Nick Fury gets his eye scratched out by a cat.
Not a cat.
That was not for me.
Flurgle, or whatever they call it. Flurkin.
Yeah, right, yeah. A flurkin. But yeah, no, it ended because he was calling it the Protector Initiative or something. And then he saw that her flight call sign was Avenger. Which... Then we see him deleting and typing, and the Avengers theme starts to play.
I think it's right around there where main movie time ends. The first middle credit scene, that's where it comes back to the Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
As they're kind of analyzing the pager, and they say, hey, it's just suddenly gone off. We'll try to get power. We need to know what kind of signal it's sending and who is on the other side of that signal. And then it pretty quickly turns to... Brie Larson there as Captain Marvel, just like, hey, where's Nick Fury?
With flatter hair.
With what?
Yeah.
With flatter hair now.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. She does look like she's been in a bit of a battle, a bit of a scuffle.
So, okay. I don't know how old she's supposed to be during the events of Captain Marvel. Is part of her power not aging between 1990 whatever to current day?
Could be.
I'm sure we will get a Tony Stark wisecrack / explanation for that in Endgame, yes. But probably she's just part of, you know, she's powered by an Infinity Stone to some degree.
So that's
my guess. Or maybe she's been traveling at the speed of light for the last 25 years. So
that's the mid-credits scene. The end-credits scene, however, is a little more juicy. We see Nick Fury's desk, obviously not there because he was snapped out of existence. Goose shows up. Was it Goose? I think it's Goose.
Yeah.
The Flurkin. Shows up, kind of looking for Fury. Starts to clean itself a little bit, and then, oh boy, here comes a hairball. What could it possibly be? And it ends up being the Tesseract.
Because the Flurkin swallows it earlier in the movie.
Right.
So,
We didn't talk about Flurkin at all.
Flurkin does eat the Tesseract earlier in the movie.
Along with
that's what it spit.
It's got pocket. Well, this is a comic book thing, but it has pocket universes inside of its cheeks.
Whee!
Huh.
That's cool, though.
They don't say that in the movie, but I assume that's what they were doing.
So here's my thing. I didn't ever make the assumption that when we saw the cat barf up the Tesseract, that we were in current time. I thought we had flashed back again to the 90s.
Yeah, I thought we flashed back too, because S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't exist now.
Oh, good point. S.H.I.E.L.D. right? isn't a thing anymore. Not since,
well. I figured
Winter Soldier.
I figured because Nick Fury wasn't at his desk and such, like it wasn't just him like leaving the desk and then this happens. There's just nothing there.
Yeah, personally, I think that was meant to be his same desk in the 90s. I don't think that was current time.
Yeah, I took that as the 90s too, because I don't think he has a
desk. Yeah, I don't think he has a desk in current time. He doesn't have like an office like that, I believe. So here's what it means to me, is it means that in the 90s, S.H.I.E.L.D. had the Tesseract, and then somewhere along the way, because in the Marvel Universe, we're first introduced to the Tesseract in Thor, correct?
Yeah, in the post-credits scene of Thor. So here's if you guys have questions, I've been watching them one movie per week. I'm on track to I'll watch Infinity War the week before Endgame comes out. So I just would have watched Doctor Strange last week, but they're pretty fresh in my memory.
Okay.
But yeah, so the Tesseract was introduced in the post credits of Thor, and Nick Fury has it, and S.H.I.E.L.D. has it.
Okay. So that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's so. I heard like people had questions about the Tesseract timeline. I guess that didn't confuse me, but again, I've been watching all these movies very recently. So, Captain America had it on that plane. He fought with Red Skull. It fell out of the plane into the ocean. Howard Stark found it. Howard Stark helped found S.H.I.E.L.D. And then people are like, "Well, how'd Lawson, Annette Bening, Mar-Vell get it?" Well, she's working for Project Pegasus. There's a thing in Avengers where they call Phase 2 Project Pegasus or something like that, but it involves the Tesseract. So it's, for me, I was able to put that together. It's safe to assume that she was probably working for S.H.I.E.L.D. or another branch of the government that existed alongside them at that time.
So,
which is why she made an invisible spaceship, but that wasn't a good enough solution for the Skrulls. They needed to, the light speed engine didn't make any sense to me. You've got these ships zipping in and out of different galaxies in the blink of an eye.
That didn't make a huge amount of sense to me either. Although I do like that they used the same animation that they used in Guardians 2 for the space jumps.
Yeah, and the planet, the text on the planets was exactly what they did in the first Guardians of the Galaxy, where the brackets come up and expand, and then very quickly the brackets disappear, and it's the name of the planet and the space coordinates.
Yep.
So, how many characters do we have right now that are powered by Infinity Stones?
Technically, alive, two.
Wow.
Thanos is currently powered by all. Captain Marvel is ostensibly powered by one.
She's powered by Silver Rack.
But sort of a filtered down version, I think.
Scarlet Witch is powered by the Aether?
Mind.
The Mind Stone.
Yeah.
I thought Vision was powered.
Vision is mind. Vision is powered. Reality?
No, her powers are red for some reason, but she was created with the Mind Stone. And then later, Ultron used that Mind Stone. Here we go. Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver were created with the Mind Stone, but they didn't know it was the Mind Stone. And then Ultron took it out of the thing, put it in Vision.
Gotcha. Mm.
But Scarlet Witch is currently not around. Vision also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not around. So I think it's just Thanos and Captain Marvel today. I don't know where Thor's weapons power come from, because he is, with Stormbreaker, he's at least as powerful as Captain Marvel. At least.
Yeah.
Probably more powerful, because he can teleport anywhere at any time with that thing.
Crazy. Well, guys, final thoughts. Shall we each give it a 1 to 10?
I will. Oh, my final theory. If people really want me to get into this someday, I will. I think there was an original Guardians of the Galaxy script written by Nicole Perlman, which then James Gunn came in and completely rewrote top to bottom. He got rid of everything she did. Mm-hmm. She is also listed as a story person on this movie, and I think that a lot of this was that unused Guardians of the Galaxy script repurposed to be Captain Marvel.
Could be.
But I could do a whole thing on that someday if people care or don't care. I've been told a lot that people don't care unless you love this movie unconditionally, so...
Well, I guess I'll start with my scale, and I think I'm going to keep it right around where I had it as my initial thought, probably sitting at a solid 7 for me. Not their best work, but far from a bad movie.
Yeah, I will. I'm also going to put it at about a 7. I can easily think of, off the top of my head, I can think of 5 Marvel movies that are worse than this movie. And even they, I would say, are better than 5s on a 1 to 10 scale. Sure. So I think a 7 and a comfortable 7, maybe even a high 7. Okay. But a 7.
Sure. I use my 1 to 10 scale fully. The first half of this movie drove me so nuts that I got to give the whole thing a 5 out of 10. Not the worst Marvel movie, no. But it did, no, I didn't. Not the first half was just so kind of all over the place for me.
All right.
I think,
but it finished strong.
Yeah, and for an origin movie about a lesser known universe hero that is going to have to do a lot of work in the upcoming movies, I think it was a strong enough opening.
Yeah, and certainly money wise, it's a strong enough opening.
Yeah, how's it doing?
It had a like $450-60 million worldwide opening, which is obviously incredible. It's like the 4th highest in the MCU. That's a little bit, you know, not all the movies came out on the same weekend worldwide, which is kind of Marvel's standard now. But by any measure, yeah, it's doing really, really well. I'll be curious to see how it does in the second weekend. I think domestically it'll do fine. Apparently word of mouth in China is not good. It's just kind of not a movie. Like, I think it's the same reason they don't really get into Star Wars. I don't think they're super interested in sci-fi fantasy, just as sure. a general audience. I don't think it interests them that much. So movies like that don't play as well there. But as Marvel grows in a brand, you know, worldwide, it's number one or number two in most markets, because Marvel's brand is so huge at this point in time.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But it's making Marvel money.
That it is.
Just it's its own scale.
Yep.
Well, agree, disagree, have other things you need to tell us? Let us know. You can find us on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. We are SotsWatch, SotsWatch.
Thanks again for listening, everybody. I'm Aaron.
I'm Ben.
I'm Doug.
Keep watching, Sots.